The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley. By the way, that was the production team here at WWDB. Matt Minarek and Brett Cronenberger. You guys are the best.
The remix.
Yeah, we got a new band starting here, by the way. I don't have to look too far for the vocalist.
But we're nice guys.
Yeah. Boom. Thank you, fellas. That was crazy. They started looking at me before we... I knew there was something up with you guys. By the way, I want to welcome everybody into the Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. We're sponsored by Quinn Law Group. We've got a fantastic show today. Greg Spizer's Sean's guest of the SCP Law. A great show, lots to talk about, but I'm going to start off with Sean, of course.
Yeah, no, Joe, thanks, and welcome to the program. Those of you that actually pay attention to us once a month know a little bit about what this program is all about. It's an opportunity for myself and JDoc to highlight lawyers in our community. Maybe the ones that you don't see on the billboards, maybe the ones that aren't mass advertisers on TV, and the folks, but you know, the folks that are behind the, you know, those commercials, beyond those commercials and beyond those big billboards, are lawyers truly making a difference in our community? One life at a time, one client at a time, and really killing it. And, you know, I like to highlight them and bring them and give them a face to the community that may not know all of us by name, by face.
Normally we do that. This week we couldn't get them.
So we got one of my... Yeah.
Exactly.
No, Greg is...
Greg's the best.
You know, yeah. And Jay, you've done shows with Greg before.
Oh, that's okay.
Greg and I go back probably, 24 years now. Greg and I, before we were both lawyers, we were law students together. Greg was 3L during my 1L year at Dickinson Law, and we became, you know, friends, even though we were in different classes at that point. We met each other, we knew each other, and funny story was, when Greg first went out and became a lawyer, he was on the defense side, much like a lot of us were. And I remember, and I don't know if you actually remember, but I was clerking for a judge in New Jersey in the fall of 2000, and Greg was one of the lawyers in front of us. And I'm like, holy cow, you know, what's the chances of Greg being a lawyer in Somerset County, New Jersey?
Holy cow.
Of all places. And I'm like, I see one of my boys.
Yeah. But I don't think I got a good ruling on it, so Sean didn't help me out.
Well, I had a plaintiff's bent back then, even then, and I didn't really help out the defense lawyers, even if they were my friends.
That's amazing.
So, yeah, listen, Greg, welcome to the program. We're gonna kind of dive in and really talk about your background, your firm, and all of the great things that you're doing, because you're a really interesting story, interesting background. But you know, what I wanted to start off the program today was, you know, while this program is always kind of runs the gamut of sports, and we got sports to talk about with the Phillies home opener 2 days away.
Yep.
With world news, heck, we're a little bit more than a month in with Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the devastation that's going on there. Historic events in Washington with Ketanji Brown Jackson's imminent, rise to the Supreme Court. But a little bit closer to home, we had two folks that you know, obviously close to JDoc. Your dad passed; he was 80 years old, and we wanted to, you know, express our condolences.
Thank you, Sean.
And your dad was obviously a leader in the Iron Workers Union. Tell me a little bit about your old man and just about the impact that he had on the community and what drove you, obviously, to follow in his path.
Well, it's interesting. He became a union official in 1981. He was the assistant business agent and financial secretary at the Iron Workers Union. Then he became the business manager years later. And he was he grew up not, you know, poor, and he had the opportunity to represent his members at the same time you know, give back to the community. He was a football coach. He was, you know, head of our East Falls community, our sports association. And he put himself in a position where, and he used to have shirts that said work hard or go home. So, and the iron workers used to buy them. And so that you could see them all on the jobs, iron workers, local 401. He was about hard work. And he made a difference in a lot of lives. He was really active in the you know, in giving to the police and fire and the veterans associations, and he just loved being an ironworker. He's politically active. I can tell you that I can't tell you how many judges, including Kevin Dougherty, the PA Supreme Court, said to me, "I'm where I'm at right now, partially because of your dad, and of course his brother John. So you can't take all the credit, but
right."
My dad was heavily involved in you know, politically throughout the city, and you know, obviously, you know, we're going to miss him, but we're going to carry on his legacy here. I got into the labor radio and all those things, and about 8 years ago, and you know, I appreciate the legacy he left, and we're going to carry it on down here. And I want to thank you, Sean, for bringing it up, man. I love you for it.
Wow. Likewise, Joe. And you know, it's always telling when I can always tell a lot about a father when I get to know their son. Mm-hmm. And you know, and you know, I think people, you can always tell that if you surround yourself with good people, they usually started with good people on the top.
Yeah. It's a nice testament to your dad, Joe. Yes. Sorry for your loss.
Yeah. And I appreciate it. If I get anything from him, it's my drive and my work ethic. I mean, it's been a tough week, but I'm not missing any shows, and I'm working, and the guys will tell you they get my podcast and all that like it's a regular Wednesday, but and all of our scheduling. But that's largely because of him. You know, we're going to obviously segue into another situation in the city. And hard work is something that one of the things that the three of us all have in common, and passionate.
Yeah.
If you would.
You know, you know, Greg and I are both fellow trial lawyers. We represent injured victims of personal injury and wrongful death. Greg's practiced probably a little bit. You know, he's had a lot of mass tort practice as well in his years, where he's representing classes of people. But you know, we have kind of a small, close-knit bar amongst the plaintiff's lawyers in Philadelphia. You think Philly's a big legal market. We all know each other, and it's really tight-knit. And we lost one of our own this past weekend in Slade McLaughlin, of the McLaughlin and Loricello firm. For those that may not know Slade, he wasn't one of the billboard guys, okay? But that dude, he was incredible. I became friendly with Slade a little bit more than 20 years ago when I was in my LLM program at Temple. He took an interest in me. I wasn't working for him, but he was always really generous with his time. You know, when you need direction and you look for mentors in this business, you don't always find them in your own firm. And I remember, you know, when I was a young puppy lawyer, maybe 2-3 years out, and you know, he told me something that I kind of knew, but didn't really, you know, think about, was that hard work, outworking the competition. There's no secret to that success other than beating the other side into submission and outwork them. And I think to this day, Slade was 65 when he passed this past weekend. And I don't know that I've ever experienced or knew of a harder working guy. That dude was literally a grinder. Like, he probably, you know, he outworked people 20 years, 30 years.
I didn't know him, but I heard the same things.
Yeah.
I mean, of what a great attorney and what a really hardcore, hardworking guy he was.
And I think one of the things that, you know, when I first heard the news, I got a text from one of our friends, Frank Strokoff, who's a mutual friend, who's been on this program. And he's like, "Did you hear?" And I'm like, "What?" I was in depositions all day. I didn't hear anything. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And you know, I went on Facebook. I started reading the things, and I saw the law.com article, and I couldn't believe it. You know what had happened. And Greg and I were talking about this before the start of the program. What we appreciated about the reporting of this is just the candor that his wife and his partner Paul Loricello had in sharing this and disseminating the news. They could have easily hid a lot of information about his death, but he committed suicide. And we don't talk about it enough in this business, just how much pressure is associated with it. Just the level of, you don't disconnect sometimes, particularly as business owners like Greg and I are. And you know, this was, and, you know, we don't talk about suicide enough and just what pressures go on, not just with children. You know, when we think of, you know, pressure and you hear of suicide, you don't always think about, you hear about kids doing it. Okay. And you don't, but you don't always hear about the pressure that adults and business owners have as well.
It's interesting you say that, because success, usually you would hear somebody, and I mean, you know, a stereotypical situation, somebody's down on their luck, they may have a drug problem or all these things that downtrodden, and that's a terrible situation. We all know somebody who's been in that situation, whoever they may be, but you're right. You don't hear of the, you know, somebody who's, I mean, literally got one of the greatest reputations around, yeah, literally everything to live for, and pressures and success, you know, is a whole nother ball of wax that is not, you know, the something that a stereotypical situation, but those pressures are incredible.
Yeah, it was just a horrible story, and it's horrible. I think, you know, there's so much pressure doing what we do as business owners, as deadlines, all the things, but also given specifically what we do as trial lawyers. When our phone rings, it's because someone's had something bad happen to them, okay? And the kind of work that Sean and I do, it's often the bad is often catastrophic bad. They've lost a loved one, or they're potentially not going to work the rest of their life, or, you know, a variety of tragedies. And it's hard, right? So when you're seeing that every day, and you know that you have a responsibility to these clients and to these folks, and to do the utter best you can for them. On top of that, with the deadlines that come with our business, the administrative functions that come with our business, like I said before, the deadlines, it's a very all-consuming business. And I, you know, you talked, Joe, so eloquently about your dad. My father is a Dickinson Law grad. And my father, knock on wood, thank God, is still with us. And my father's going to be 79 in June.
Is he still practicing?
Still practicing.
I knew it. I knew he would.
He's still practicing, and he's coming on 54 years of practicing law.
Wow.
And I saw that work ethic. He had his own firm. And somehow, like, I look up at him and say, you know, he was somehow able to do it, though. Still, like, you talked about your dad, Joe, and involved in my life and involved in sports and those kinds of things and present in my life. And I look at it now that I've done this for almost 25 years, and say, how did he balance that?
It's very interesting. I've often thought about the definition of success, okay, and what that is, and balance has to be one of the primary, you know, words that I think of. In other words, being successful, having balance in your family, and obviously being able to provide for your family, and also having a fulfilling work life. The one thing I was saying was, we were putting our pictures together and all, and it's very interesting. And Greg, it's so great that, you know, your father's still with you and he's still passionate. The one thing I thought of when we were looking at all the pictures and all, was if it's possible to try to live for today. Now, we all work hard, and in your world, in both of your worlds, you're always working on cases, and those cases will someday come to fruition. Here's an interesting thought. Okay, try to enjoy the process, because if you don't enjoy the process, you know, if you're always, as a great attorney like you guys are, if you're always thinking about the day is get the settlement, okay, instead of the little victories in there and fighting hand in hand with that client, you're going to live, you know, it's going to be anxiety ridden. Now, you already have clients that are in the worst experiences of their life. But one of the beautiful things is when you guys are able to put this thing together on a daily basis and give them the updates, and when things are rocking them. Now, sometimes there's going to be bad news, but the reality is that, and what I learned was to try to, it's easier said than done. I mean, but try to live also in the moment as we plan and work for, you know, the culmination of things.
Yeah, no, I two things. One, if, you know, to to talk about enjoying the process and not just the victory. Okay. It's really important. I think Greg and I share the same. We don't do this for the money. Now, we like that we make money.
Yeah.
When we need it to survive.
Sure, right, of course.
Okay. But I'll tell you, I'm sure Greg's the same. I'd rather get that thank you card.
Oh, yeah.
From that client after the case, knowing that we made a difference in their life.
No doubt.
Than the attorney's fee. Because there's money to, you could be able to make money doing anything.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not about the money. It's about making a difference. Okay. And to talk about, you know, Greg's dad and what I knew about him, you know, from all of our conversations over the years, Greg's dad probably turned down more money to make life for his family great and made sacrifices. And while he worked hard, he threaded that needle to really be present in the lives of his family and also be a good lawyer. Yeah. And I think we all want to thread that needle, right? And it's really hard.
Easier said than done.
It is. And how I try to thread the needle, and I don't always do a good job of it, is you know, try to be present in my own kid's life. And that's why, you know, people ask me, why do you still coach? Why do you still coach baseball? Why do I still coach flag football? It's because I need to thread that needle every day. And that's my sanity.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that keeps me level, is that I know I leave money on the table. I know that I don't take on as many cases as I potentially could. But that's okay, because my kid is 14 right now and I only get this opportunity one time. And you have twins, they're going off to college in a year, less than a year. Time is finite, as we really know.
Most valuable commodity, right? And I mean, I think it's so tragic what happened in our community this week, but I think it's made all of us stop and say, we have an obligation to our clients, and you have to work hard, and that's what they're hiring us to do, and that's what we do. But it's okay to take 20 minutes, half an hour for lunch and take a walk around the block, clear your head, or put the phone away for an hour, you know, while you're with your family. Quite frankly, I think it probably makes you a better lawyer if you can take those moments to get away a little bit, take a break.
You know how it makes you a better lawyer? And I'm not a lawyer, but I'll tell you how it makes it. You have the part of your job is to be able to obviously work and deal with your clients in a proper way. And if you're totally shot all the time, it makes it very difficult not to get stressed out to the point where being a great lawyer is not only, knowing the law and being able to, represent your client, but it's also to be able to communicate with your client and to be able to handle those situations. I've talked to, and I'll give you an example. I talked to a one, and I probably brought this up in the past, but I had an injured worker call from one of the unions, and we have a program. And the injured worker said to me, I got hurt a year ago. I said, okay, well, the union has attorneys that they endorse. But we, of course, she said she already had an attorney and she just wants, she's having other situations with her shoulder, whatever it was. I called that attorney. That cat was rolling. You could see he had had enough. He said, I don't want the case. I'm getting out. You know, point is, God bless that man. But my point is, you know, part of that walk around the block is so that you can have some space. And because being an attorney and a great attorney, of course, as firm owners and business owners, is being able to handle the business. It's being able to do the obviously representing of the clients and understanding the law and being a trial lawyer and all that. But it's also having the wherewithal and the ability to keep it together. And if you're constantly on the grind, you know, if you're snapping at clients you're not going to be a good attorney because you're not going to have any clients. And so, I mean, it's just a thought process, right? And, you know, it's my two cents.
Yeah, no, and you know, great points. And I think, you know, what I think this is a reminder for all of us is to kind of like look in the mirror, right? Evaluate where we are in our own lives and personal lives. And, you know, our clients think they want this hard charging, aggressive lawyer, right? When they hire us, you know, and it takes the shape of, you know, billboards with aggressive, you know, it's like usually the first buzzword that lawyers use when they want to categorize, well, I'm a bulldog lawyer. Sure. we're all bulldogs when we need to be. But I think having a level of passion, empathy, kindness, both, you know, it helps you communicate and understand your clients a lot better.
Absolutely.
Helps you understand the people you work with a lot better. And I haven't always been perfect in those departments, and I am still not. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm constantly working on is you know, a lot of times, you know, Greg's probably the same way. You get that email from that defense lawyer, and you really want to freaking, you know, send them the poison pen email back and respond to it. And when somebody asks for the extension to file something, you're like, no, you know, and, you know, because, or the typical lawyer we get from the defense is like, when you ask for an extension, like, I have to get approval from my client.
Right,
they hide behind the client for that thing. If all of us, and I think, you know, would take a deep breath and understand and remember what it's like to be in a jam and understand what it's like to treat people with kindness, the profession and life would be a lot better.
Yeah. And, you know, it's I think like many things in life, I'd say for the most part, both plaintiff and defense, most attorneys I deal with on a day-to-day basis are really, they're good advocates, good people, and they get the, you know, extensions and that, you know, while we're adversaries, you have to have some sort of a work
totally
relationship.
Agree.
Problem is, like many things in life, there's, you know, a few bad apples can spoil the bunch. But for the most part, I think people, the lawyers I deal with on a day-to-day basis, for the most part, really do want to, you know, try to get along and not fight just to fight. But the problem is, it's still very tough. And the ones that do want to fight, you can't help it, right? You're type A, and, you know, you get, if you get your back up, and then your blood pressure's going, and away you go.
Yeah, like as young puppy lawyers, we were full of piss and vinegar. We really wanted to go after people and stuff like that, right? And always wanted to fight. As we gotten older and more relaxed, I wouldn't say relaxed, but wiser, and understand that not every fight is worth fighting.
And sometimes strategically. Right? Like, strategically, you have to, you've got to pick and choose battles and know when to give and know when to hold your ground. And I've always thought of it too, that if just because you hold your ground or we disagree on a position, which is going to happen, we're in an adversarial litigation, it doesn't mean you can disagree without being disagreeable, right?
Or disrespectful.
Right. And if the other side and I disagree on an issue, that's okay. That's why you have judges. And that's why you have courts. And you let them call balls and strikes. But it doesn't mean you have to – it has to rise to a level. Because in my experience, I've never seen – if I start screaming on the phone or I'm being screamed at, that's not going to change my mind, nor am I going to change theirs.
It might actually, like, force you to, like, you know, really recoil and
exactly.
Go back. You know, I think – and we started this segment when I was talking about Slade and advice that he gave me as a young lawyer about working hard and things like that. And I'm always – you know, we both have associates in our firm and – you know, I think one of the things that I always like to advise people, you know, and the ones, those that are willing to listen to me, and you know, if you could go back to young Greg, right, and you could, you know everything you know now, what would you tell him about the practice and about the way to treat people and about the way to work?
Yeah, I would say, it's a good question. I'd probably say be yourself. That there's, I think a lot of times you come into the law profession and you look around and you may think you need to act a certain way, whatever way that is, to either be successful, climb the ladder, financially, what have you. And I think it's like most things in life, authenticity, you know, rules the day. And be yourself and, you know, obviously you've got to work hard and all those traits we're talking about. But if you're authentic, right, and you're usually more times than not, like you're going to, at the end of the night, you may not sleep a lot, but you're going to sleep easy because you're yourself and you know you handled the situation what you felt was the proper way.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because what it was, I guess Slade's wife posted something either online or in the Legal Intelligencer. What was her advice, and is that in a sense? In your community, the question is, what can you take from it? The things that we're talking about right now, what were her sentiments in regards to what other lawyers should
well,
learn?
I think the overall message that I took from the article about his passing was take a deep breath and decompress.
Mm-hmm.
Take a deep breath.
Exactly.
And decompress, and don't let this become all consuming to the point where you're not you. You're not you, right? You're not authentic. You're not, you can't truly be yourself and forget who you really are. And I think at our core, we weren't all, like this before we became lawyers, right? At one point, we were athletes and students and brothers and sisters and all of those things. And, while we might have been all driven to get where we are today and tightly wound at certain points of our lives, we did breathe the air of, the seashore, right? We did, understand what it's like to have a scraped knee and be a kid and all those things. And I think part of, like last night, right, I was coaching baseball. I'm on a baseball field in the light rain and, watching boys, and I'm throwing ground balls and hitting fungos and doing all those things. And I paused for a little bit and just said to myself, this is what it's about.
Where else would you want to be, right? Except there.
Not there. Anywhere, but anywhere. I didn't want to be in the office at that moment.
Exactly.
I didn't want to be working on a case at that moment. But I think what you said, I think that's what makes us better lawyers. That's what makes us better people. And those things matter.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, and that person, it's interesting though, because it's, there's an intangible. I always wonder, I'm going to see an attorney at about 4 o'clock today. And I wonder a lot of times about the older attorneys who could hang it up and just mail it in and just say, listen, I've had it. I'm 65 years old. I'm 70 even. I've done enough, but we're still where they get that drive. I mean, and that passion, and people, and when you're a client, and I'm a layman, so I look at you guys, and I'm like, I would like these guys to represent me. Very, very often, you're looking for somebody who doesn't have to be Vince Lombardi standing in front of you, obviously, but you're looking for that a little bit intense kind of person. And it usually goes hand in hand with a little bit that tenacity and all that. It must be in some cases very hard to separate that and keep that demeanor. But often, there must be so many little things, including the fact that you can separate it. But what are the things besides intellect that make for a good lawyer? That's
a great question. And I've thought a lot about that, because Sean was mentioning earlier, I've got twin daughters. They're off to college, and there's tons now. The applying to college process is much different than when we were
totally
kids.
Yeah.
But when I look back at kind of my career and where you go to schools, I'm sure you'd agree, there's so much more to it than just intellect, right? Obviously, you hope you've been blessed with a certain amount of raw intelligence that you can comprehend concepts and things like that. But what separates people? What makes them successful? And when I look legally, it's first of all, there's a social smarts, there's a social awareness. You need to understand how to deal in situations. You need to know your audiences. Think about what we do as trial lawyers, right? I'm going to talk to a judge maybe differently than I talk to a jury. You need to know how to read audiences, how to read a situation, when to continue to make a point and when to close your mouth and let things rest, right? So there's obviously a base level of hopefully intelligence and intellect, but on top of that, it's just this, I call it social awareness. I tell my kids all the time, be aware of your surroundings, social skills, whatever word you want to use. Those, if somebody is blessed with those skills, at least I have found in this profession, those are the ones in law that seem to succeed. They know how to deal with clients. They know how to deal with courts. They know how to deal with defense attorneys. They seem to have it. And by the way, those people, I have no idea where they went to college or where they went to law school.
I've never been asked. I can't think of a single client or anyone who's ever asked me where I went to law school.
Correct.
You know?
Me, yeah,
and,
me either.
And I think, you know, to tie that, and then we'll tie a bow on this half hour.
Yeah.
Is you know, social awareness ties closely with the development and culture and cultivating of relationships.
Yeah.
We are in a relationship business.
Yep.
Both with prospective clients, other lawyers, you know, and how you treat people in your personal life, how you treat your family. You know, we both know a lot of lawyers that have dedicated their life just to the practice and at the sacrifice of their own family and kids.
Yeah.
They're often divorced. Their kids often hate them. And
that, by the way, that is not balance or success.
No, it's not in my mind.
No.
Not by my definition. I mean,
you might have a bank account.
Now, they might be a partner in a big firm, but I don't know that that's necessarily happiness or what you really wanted. And that might, you know, listen, to that person, they might be success, but that's not what I wanted.
Right.
And that's not what I want to do. But let's tie a bow on this half hour.
Absolutely.
We'll come back and talk about things. But what I wanted to kind of just, you know, at the end of this is to give people the phone number. If you are contemplating suicide, if this is something that you know, and you're listening to this and we made any sort of connection or sense, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. There are people that even if you're out and you're alone, you don't have a family, get help. It's worth it.
All right. So as we go to break, and we typically don't do this, we're gonna take a 15-20 second moment of silence, and then we'll be back more from Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn and his guest Greg Spicer after the break.
Suffering a personal injury as a result of another's negligence, such as a motor vehicle accident, a slip or trip and fall, a workplace injury, a product liability matter, a medical malpractice, or nursing home neglect, can be a devastating experience that can turn your life upside down. At the Quinn Law Group, founding partner Sean Quinn utilizes his extensive experience as one of Philadelphia and New Jersey's premier personal injury and trial attorneys every day to recover millions and seek justice for his clients injured in matters just like these. If you, a loved one, or someone you know has been injured as a result of someone else's negligence, or if someone you know was the victim in a wrongful death matter, contact Sean Quinn of the Quinn Law Group now at quinnlawyers.com or call 877-659-6070. That's quinnlawyers.com or 877-659-6070 and get justice and the recovery you deserve.
My name is Corporal Bradley Joseph Seitz,
Jerry Reed,
Kate Weber.
These are real veterans facing a real challenge.
I have PTSD.
And I have PTSD.
I have PTSD.
Post-traumatic stress disorder can happen to anyone.
I was still in a war zone in my mind.
But treatment can turn your life around.
Treatment has really saved my life.
To learn about PTSD and how treatment can help you, call your local VA medical center or visit ptsd.va.gov.
No man, no woman, no one left behind. For the VFW, it's a credo that stands long after our fighting days are over. Because our service never stops. We're still serving. Which is why we pledge to help our own, no matter where they are or when they need us. Standing in lockstep with those who stood so courageously for everyone else. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at VFW.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. I want to thank the Quinn Law Group for being our sponsor. And, of course, Sean's guest is Greg Spicer of VSCP Law. Great first segment. Lots to talk about. Sean, take it away.
All right. I did promise 30 minutes ago that I would do a more proper introduction of our guest, Greg Spicer, and I know we've had some fun, and we, you know, talking about our backgrounds and kind of what we, you know, kind of drove while we're navigating a serious topic. But a little bit more. I think I told you the start of the story started while we were in law school. But Greg is one of the founding partners of VSCP Law. That's not just lawyer talk for acronyms. That's him and his partners, Van Narden, Spicer, Chase, and Pinto. They formed a little bit more than a year ago now,
coming up on almost 15 months.
Yeah.
In the face of the pandemic.
Yeah, no, and we're gonna
no
talk
problem.
About, I mean, listen, VSCP Law is one of the top personal injury firms in the region. It's made up of a bunch of stud lawyers like Greg with his partners, Josh Van Narden, Ryan Chase, and John Pinto.
Great dressers, by the way. I'm going to go with Greg.
I appreciate it.
You're the best. Don't tell Josh I said that, but I'm just saying.
I'll take it.
He's not a hero. He can't argue. Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
We always root for the Scranton boy. he's close to our heart.
Although Chase is a Scranton guy, too.
Is he? All right. That's why we'll give Ryan, you know, little feedback. And, you know, Josh is all muscled up right now anyway. You know, I don't know if he even fits in those suits because he's so jacked up. But I think you can probably tell from the tone of my voice that I was friends with these guys long before they ever partnered up, and we've all had a really it goes to part of the collegiality of our business, and that we're all 40 somethings and we're all kind of in that same point in life. But Greg's been doing this for 23 years now, 24 almost.
24.
Yeah, 24 years. And started out much like a lot of us that are on this side doing representing injured victims on the defense side. Did 4-year tour duty doing that, and then spent nearly 20 years at one of the preeminent personal injury and mass tort firms in Philadelphia before striking it out and carving his own niche a little bit more than a year ago now with his partners. Greg's practice has kind of really you know, changed with starting with the defense work and, you know, I know you did some product, a lot of products liability early on that led to, his career. He was on some of the most prolific, mass tort cases. You know, a $4.85 billion settlement for Vioxx, when those cases were going on. He was involved in the Yaz birth control litigation and tons of other pharmaceutical and medical device, cases. You know, really, you know, nationally known for his work in that space and work on personal injury cases. You know, Greg's had multiple multi-million dollar verdicts and settlements. You know, a lot of times in you know, auto crash and rollover cases and crash worthiness cases. You know, Greg's. Yeah, I don't have enough time today to go through all of your awards. But you know, you're in the presence of two of the Pennsylvania's top 100 in the state of Pennsylvania for super lawyers, which is kind of cool. So there's only 98 of us out there that aren't as cool as us.
Absolutely.
No, but not in this room.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to go on. We're two of those those 100.
I already know it.
But no, and people laugh at some of the awards sometimes. But Super Lawyers is one of the ones that's peer reviewed, and it's I always say that one's a nice honor for guys like us, because that is to some extent how our community views us, and how they think of us, even if we don't always think of ourselves that way. As you know, I always laugh when somebody says you're one of the top 100 lawyers. I'm like, I know there's 100 lawyers that are better than me. but at the end of the day, you know, that's part of the things. But Greg's background, I think he, you know, told you a little bit, you know, Scranton boy. Grew up, you know, it went to Abington Heights High School and went on to Penn State, where he did his undergrad. And then we ultimately met at Dickinson School of Law. You can tell that Greg's background is very much modeled on the Scranton mentality. Grinders, hardworking guys, working class guys. And even though you're a son of a lawyer, you're a working class guy.
Yeah,
without further ado, you know, Greg, welcome to the show today.
That's a great introduction. I appreciate it. Thanks, Sean.
I'll be your hype man anytime you want.
I got to tell you, that was nice. My wife and kids, when they hear this, will definitely poke more holes in Swiss cheese than what you just said.
Yes.
You tell them you paid a lot for that introduction.
I'm gonna give a message to Nina and say, Nina, let them have 24 hours
exactly.
to enjoy that.
Exactly. That may be a little more than she'll give, but I'll take even an hour.
Nina's a lawyer as well, yeah. So she's a great attorney.
She's an attorney also?
She is. Nina and I met in law school as well.
Oh,
so she was
awesome.
My year. So Sean knows Nina as well.
Yeah.
Sean, great to see you, buddy.
Likewise.
It's been, as Sean said, we met. I think we probably had our first introduction in Dickinson Law when we both had respective intramural football teams and the flag football.
Flag football,
Dickinson
that's right.
Law.
Yes.
And if I recall, you guys beat us in the championship game. Which
we
was,
did.
Which was quite a, you know.
They were two-time defending champs.
We were. We had a good team.
And I had a, I created t-shirts we were the Gamecocks, like South Carolina, and I had the back of the shirt that says, "You have the right to remain violent."
They took a break, and they had some really good athletes. Like, these guys were good. I think they were practicing. I mean,
we did.
Let's be honest.
Let's be honest, Greg. This is still something you've had a hard time getting
I have.
Over.
Yeah, do you notice?
We're probably trying to contemplate whether you really wanted to be on Sean's show.
I can't tell you what I had for breakfast, but I remember that 25 years ago they beat us in the intramural championship game at Dickinson Law.
That's right.
But,
that's great.
Yeah, we had so. And Joe, good to see you again.
Always.
Again, sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
You know, so Sean, again, in seriousness, thank you for the introduction. I've had the pleasure of knowing Sean a long time, both in law school and then as we've been lawyers. And I think we've been not only, you know, very good friends, but confidants, and often, you know, go to lunch and bounce ideas and things off each other. And, you know, what Sean was ahead of us. Sean broke out and started his own firm. How many years is now?
It'll be 9 years this May. It's crazy.
I was going to say eight. So I was And, you know, I remember Sean, when he first started, was talking about it and gave him so much credit for doing it. And that, you know, with a young child and going out, it's not easy.
No.
You know, this is that we've talked about in the beginning of the show. This is a tough business. And then to add on top of that, to kind of take the reins. And you don't realize until you do it, there's so many things, you know, from a technology and marketing, administrative and bookkeeping.
It's amazing.
Banking. There is a million things. Just to before you even open your door,
yeah.
And
well, because you were at a firm where you were an equity partner, but that's not it wasn't a startup, and there's a distinction between being an owner in a law firm and then being somebody who's founding a brand new firm.
Right.
What were some of the challenges that you guys experienced? And I know you had a collective, and there was four of you that were doing it together, but you know. What was eye-opening to you about that process? And I know we talked about it for years.
We did. I mean, I mean, Sean was an inspiration, the fact that he did it. And because it is, you know, I was in a great firm and making a nice living. And, I could have, but this is something I've always thought to do, to be a founder. And so we did it. I'm very fortunate, you know, and I know you've mentioned before, but Josh Van Arden, Ryan Chase, John Pinto are fabulous lawyers, fabulous people, great friends.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
A business of any type, having partners and being able to get along and really, I've met you guys. We've all done a couple of shows together. That's awesome. Everybody's so complimentary of each other.
Yeah, and it's sincere. Like, we really get along. So when you start, you know, for you to do it, Sean, it was Sean or Sean, right? Like,
right.
You know, you were evaluating the technology things. There was no, and at least with us, we had more of a divide and conquer type of, you know, mentality. Like, okay, Greg, I'm going to handle these tasks, and Josh, you're going to handle that, and Ryan, you handle that. And we've continued to try to do that, and there is benefit then of having partners. So, you know, when you look at it, I think for us, I would say to someone if they're contemplating one, like, do it. You know, you went to law school, you got an education for a reason. You have the good fortune that you can hang a shingle and you can start your own business. It does, though, you know, I would say, though, to people, you need to go in eyes wide open. It is a ton
totally
of work.
True.
It is a ton of time. It is a huge commitment, right? When you're at home at night, you know, there's, you know, we were talking before about, but when you're building the firm, there's, you know, you're constantly, you know, there are tasks to do.
Oh, yeah.
Administrative. Before you even open the door.
Yep.
And then even once you open the door, there's just obviously ongoing administrative things. Something comes in about, you know, the copier breaks. Somebody's got to assign someone to deal with that.
Exactly.
Somebody's computer's not connecting to the printer.
Oh, by the way, you have to practice law too.
Correct. And right. you have to try to, you know, market and generate business. There's a lot of
exactly.
different.
Who's cutting and signing the checks?
Right.
Like, you don't think about all of the little things that possibly could go wrong. And Greg's advice is absolutely true. I think one of the things that if I was to, you know, give advice to a prospective is, yeah, definitely do it. But you got to do your homework first, right?
Right?
And make sure you plan it out. Make sure you have the funds and the capitalization of the thing because
this is,
you know, and make sure you have enough money in the bank that you can afford not to take a salary for a year.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, look, you know, I'll ask you. You ask me. You're looking back. You know, establishing. We've been doing 15 months, and thank God, you know, things are great. And we're, you know, you build this firm, but you're obviously ahead of us. And, you know, you look back on it now, and I'm sure you probably think, you know, thank God I did this. Best decision you ever made.
Yep.
But I'm sure along the way there were some days or moments where you were
stressful. I look back and year two was actually my toughest year. And I didn't know that was going to happen because when I left my firm, I had 35 clients with me in tow. And a lot of those cases were pretty well developed. And I had a really good first 6 months.
Right.
And it really helped set me up. But year two, once that pipeline of established cases started to reach their expiration and settle or go to trial, it was the rebuilding of the pipeline. So there were some lean times in terms of, you know, not that we didn't have enough money to kind of survive, we did, but when you're not getting a settlement check for 9 months. And those types of, because it's not like a defense firm where we get a check every 2 weeks.
Right.
Those things I knew could happen, but I didn't think would happen. And then I broke the levy with like $500,000 settlement after that 9 month, you know, delay. But, if I could go back, I would tell myself, advertise more, market better, and just be smarter with hiring decisions, and take more time to really vet things, because you know inevitably you make bad decisions along the way. I always say when it comes from a marketing standpoint, talk to me because I've made every mistake, and it usually makes me a better marketer, better person to kind of go out and get talent and spend more time cultivating relationships. I think I've always had a strong referral network, but I could always be better. With those things. So, you know, even today, I always say I'm a work in progress. The best version of me is the one you see today. And those things, you know, but definitely if I could go back to 2013 when I was making that move is definitely really work on, and listen, I thought I had things well planned, but you're never perfect.
There's going to be some curveballs along the way. 'Cause I know you're a big baseball guy,
yep.
But I think, if you're, like we talked about before, social awareness and social skills, and you have a pretty good sense of what's coming. The one thing also about law training, I think, being a lawyer, is it really teaches you how to assess issues, spot issues, then assess ways, pros and cons. And then hopefully by doing that, more times than not, you're going to make good decisions. Nobody is good about 1,000, but more times than not, you're going to make good decisions. And so, you know, I look at Sean and, you know, when contemplating this move, you know, I looked at Sean. Sean did it and I saw how great he's done. And I thought, and I also look at Sean too. He talks about relationships. I know, I see him. He's active on Facebook and he's active, you know, on social media and he's always, you know, and that, you know.
A lot of times I'm just poking bears, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he's like, obviously but you could also tell. Right, that you're having fun. Like Sean will post about, you know, what new Air Jordans he's wearing, or
wait till you see this week's.
You know, like he's having fun, and that's huge because in this business, it can be it's serious, and it's okay to laugh once in a while and have a little enjoyment. And you could tell Sean's really enjoying practice law. And I will tell you, we're having such a good time. It's really, you know, we are really enjoying.
You have a good support system in each other.
And we've hired, you know, when we started our firm, we had five paralegals with us. Since we've opened, we hired two associates and everybody's great and everybody gets along and we're really all, you know, with the same motivation, do right by our clients, do good work, work hard, and care about each other in that office.
Tell me what you really think of them, though. We're on the
radio. No, I'm telling you, I'm being straight.
I know
we are.
No, you have great guys.
I've got great partners and great paralegals, great associates. We're really lucky.
And I always said if I ever took on a full scale partner, I would target guys like the guys in your firm, like guys that understand what it takes to be successful, but also good people.
And I'll tell you what your firm has. And I'll tell you, this is interesting. I forget who exactly we did the first radio show with. One of the guys, somebody, I forget
exactly. Pinto and his bulldog.
Right. It could have been.
The bulldog's famous.
He's more famous than John.
So I think Greg, you and I met first, but the other three guys, one of them was booked on one of our other shows. And each time, I forget which one of the partners, but the first thing he said was, "I'd like to get the other three partners on the show." And he was constant, and we were doing it like almost immediately. I love the fact.
I think that might have been Chase. It might have been Ryan.
Yeah,
it was Ryan.
I think it was Ryan.
It was Ryan. And Ryan, you know, like when it was all said and done, Pinto hadn't been on yet, right? Uh-huh. And he said, "I'd like to get." I'd like to get John. Listen, I felt so good when we had all four of you on.
Yeah.
But it was an awesome thing to see these guys have each other's back.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic. One of the things I want to say, because believe it or not, we got 5 minutes left.
Crazy.
Not contact information yet. Types of cases you handle as a person.
What are you looking for?
I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. So, you know, Sean said, I've kind of done the full scope of cases as a plaintiff attorney, and our firm, and as well as me personally. So we're doing a lot of medical malpractice. Unfortunately, you know, there's medical errors. We're handling a number of sex abuse claims.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately there's way too many of those.
Sure.
We're handling, you know, we do products liability as Sean mentioned. I've handled a number of product liability cases over the year, from auto defects to other types of products. And we're handling just some civil rights cases. We have some very interesting civil rights cases.
High profile ones.
Yeah. We have a few of them. My partner, Josh Van Arn, represents a few people who were wrongfully convicted and spent many, many years in prison and were since exonerated. I have a large civil rights case. We have some of those. And as well as just catastrophic type injury cases, everything from, you know, auto to unfortunately people getting injured on work sites or premises liability type cases. So it kind of runs the gamut, and which I also think makes it interesting. I know your
totally
practice
agree.
Is similar.
Yeah, talk about Sean, you know, your practice.
Everything Greg mentioned is we have a very similar practice, with the exception of the civil rights and the medical malpractice. I've done both of those things in the past, but my practice is really refined more on the construction and industrial accidents, to go along with the, I always say, vehicle accident cases, right? Mm-hmm. Because that it's everything from your tractor trailers to your cars and your
motorcycles.
And motorcycles and everything in between, as well as premises cases. But we have similar, but you know, listen, we have kind of a relationship where, I refer them, you know, a lot of medical malpractice cases and things like that for reviews, because, you know, I think they're some of the best lawyers. And people ask me, why do you refer to them? Why do you send business to them? And I say, because I want them to give the best possible outcome to this client.
Your network's important to you.
And they're people I trust. And if I had my own case, I'd go to them.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's great. We our firms have a great work relationship. And I think that's a huge word, right? Trust. That if somebody approaches Sean and wants Sean to represent them, and it's not maybe a case he's going to handle, or vice versa, if somebody comes to us, you want to know that if you're putting that client, if you're referring them to somebody else, you want to make sure that you know they're going to be in good hands.
That's right.
Right? I don't have to worry about it.
It's your reputation's on the line.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you have a real good complement in your firm with folks that are focused on big picture, as well as like a guy like Josh, who's like, he can put him in any county anywhere and go try a case. Yeah. Van Arden. He's like a mercenary, man. He can just walk in and try any case.
Yeah, Josh has gotten some tremendous results, tremendous verdicts in counties where you would not expect.
Right.
Yeah. And
he can dominate in central PA, even if he doesn't look like central PA.
Well, exactly. What's interesting, we got a minute or two, but you're both contingency fee, right? So in other words, listeners, they don't have to pay for your services at first. Talk about that real quick, what that is.
Yeah, what's unique about, not, unlike a divorce lawyer or a criminal defense lawyer where you pay up front, the beauty of a contingency fee arrangement is we can really level the playing field and help people that don't have the funds to go out and hire a lawyer and pay them up front. We make the money only if we're successful and make a recovery for them. So it really helps us represent David in that Goliath battle.
And it levels the playing field. There's no way a person in many of those situations could afford attorneys out of pocket.
And our firms take monster risks. In a medical malpractice case, you guys might have 50 to 100 grand or more on the street invested in a case just to get dollar one.
Right. Absolutely. If you would, Greg, contact information.
Yeah, how can people find you?
So again, my firm is VSCP Law. You can find us online at www.vscplaw.com. Our main number is 215-960-0000. My personal email is my first initial last name, gspizer@vscplaw.com, and my direct dial is 215-960-0402.
Awesome. And the host of our show, Sean.
And Joe, thanks for another great show. Gentlemen, Greg, it was a pleasure and an honor.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
And I had to get you first before we got Van Narden in here, because
bragging rights, of course.
Right. Well, we've known each other longer. You can reach me. You can contact the firm at 877 Quinn Law. QuinnLawyers.com, or if you want to shoot me an email directly, Sean@QuinnLawyers.com.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Top Lawyer with Sean Quinn. And of course, Sean's guest for the hour, Greg Spizer, VSCP Law. Of course, Matt Menarek right there, and Brett Cronenberg for being great producers. Here we go again.
Oh, we got another fight song for
Joe
Doc. Awesome.
Oh, my God. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. On behalf of everybody on the panel, Sean and Greg, I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.